Jonathan Gruber makes a case for investing in innovation in dozens of cities in Middle America, beyond the marquee cluster of zip codes. The economist at MIT is the author of Jumpstart America, How Breakthrough Science Can Revive Economic Growth and the American Dream. Next week, he'll be speaking here in Chattanooga on Thursday at the EDNY, starting at 5 p.m., followed by a panel discussion, an event organized by the Enterprise Center. Jonathan joined us by phone for a preview, starting with his book.
The idea of the book is to recognize that a lot of what made America grow so rapidly in the post-war decades was government sponsorship of research and development, that so much of what became our modern economy, both in terms of the products we use and the jobs we have, were run through government R&D projects. We used to lead the world by spending 2% of our entire gross national product on public research and development. Today, we spend 0.6%, and we're 13th in the world. And we think that that has been a major drag on the growth of the U.S. economy. But we think more than that, that the problem is that the research and development that we do and increasingly the innovation economy is focused on just a few coastal hubs, and the benefits have not really been spread around the country. And so the point of our book is that we think that there needs to be more of investment in research and development in our nation, but it needs to be done in a way that the benefits are shared with all places, like Chattanooga, not just with Cambridge and San Francisco.
So how do you propose we do that?
What we do in the book is we first sort of go through the history of sort of how public R&D was so successful in building the U.S. economy, and then we talk about the economics of why the private sector isn't doing enough R&D, isn't doing the kind of breakthrough science we need. And then we talk about places in America that can be next-generation tech hubs. We went to the data and we said, how many places in America are big? They have more than 100,000 working-age population. They're well-educated. At least 25% of the population has a college education. And they're affordable, and the average house price is less than $260,000 a year. We came up with 102 cities in 36 states with 80 million people in them. Places like Chattanooga, places with good universities and a good quality of life and a well-educated population, but right now not places that are really the epicenters of innovation that we're seeing in San Francisco and Boston, New York. So our proposal is that the federal government learn from Amazon. What did Amazon do when they wanted an HQ2? They held a competition. They said to cities, you can apply to be our new HQ2, and 230 cities around the country applied. We want to have a competition, but unlike Amazon's competition, which was basically who can give us the biggest tax break, we have a competition which is which places can create the best new tech hubs, can put together a coalition of business leaders, educational leaders, and local politicians to create the preconditions for becoming a new tech hub, and then have a federal competition where the winning places would get a major injection, billions of dollars of federal funding, to create the infrastructure and other support you need to become a place that technology can bloom.
Why is the geographic dimension of what you're proposing so important for its success?
I think it's important in two senses. One sense is economic, which is that basically we have a situation where R&D is being concentrated in a few very expensive places, and that I think is limiting the amount of R&D we can do. It's too expensive to do R&D in Cambridge. Kendall Square now costs as much as Midtown Manhattan in terms of real estate prices. But I think more important is political, which is that basically we have created a system where when you talk about science, people outside of a few cities feel left out. They feel like, well, more science just means more money to a few coastal cities. It doesn't really matter for my community. And we think that the geographic dimension is important to explain to the rest of the country that there are many places around the potential to become next-generation tech hubs, and we need to take an active role in encouraging that.
Another thing I wanted to focus on here was the level of skill in the jobs created by this approach. Are we talking all or largely PhDs? Because if we are, that's leaving out a lot of people who need good-paying jobs.
No, in fact, we're not talking largely PhDs. One, the manager at the Central Florida Research Park, which is a very prominent research park, which is a model we just use in the book, said that he's told that for every PhD scientist, you need 10 lab techs. So we are talking about jobs that require skills. We're not talking about unskilled jobs, but they're not PhDs. They're not necessarily even 4-year college degrees. It's really about having technical skills to work in high value added jobs, which means more education than a lot of people have. And part of the proposals places would put in to become next generation tech hubs would include how they're going to provide their population those technical skills. But it's not PhDs, it's not even necessarily college degrees. It's about the kind of high value added jobs that are throughout the chain when you create high tech products, from the scientist to the lab techs all the way to the administrative assistants. You need to make the company function well, and these are good paying jobs.
What about the concerns about automation and AI wiping out whole classes of jobs?
Look, as we say, the robots are coming. The question is, who's going to make the robots? So if your concern is about automation taking away jobs, the answer is not to fight automation. We can't fight automation. It's coming whether we like it or not. If we try to fight it in the U.S., it'll just come in other countries. But what we should do is recognize that if robots are coming, that means a whole lot of high-value-added jobs in making those robots. And we need to be the folks that make the robots. The robots are going to get made. The question is, will they be made in the U.S. or will they be made in China? And that's really the key decision before us, is are we going to make the investments? China is making the investments in basic science they need to be the leading country that makes the robots, that makes these new technologies. We're backing off from those commitments, and we need to lean in.
Another challenge here is the federal government committing to spend the money at a time where we now have an election season and we have all of this political polarization in Washington and elsewhere in the country. What do you think it's going to take to break through that logjam for folks in Washington to consider what you're proposing and spend some money?
Well, I think what it takes is really pretty basic, which is just a recognition that science investments leads to new jobs. Look, everyone wants jobs. This isn't a red or blue issue. Jobs is a bipartisan issue. And I think what we need to do is make sure people recognize the tie-in between investing in science and creating good, high-value-added jobs. And that's why we think the geographic components are important, because we think every place, from Chattanooga to other cities, have economic development officers who are interested in bringing jobs to their city, creating good, high-value-added jobs. And I think if we can get the politicians to realize that the way to do that is to invest in science, then I think we can bring the kind of bipartisan support that an ambitious agenda like this needs.
And it's really back to the future, you're arguing, because we have this history, not only in terms of coming out of World War II, but even before that, we have a history of doing these types of things.
We have a big history post-World War II, but it's not just ancient history. So one of the examples we use in the book is the example of the Human Genome Project, which was a project that was first proposed by private companies, but they could not do it without government funding. So the government invested $3 billion over 13 years to map the human genome so that we could understand the mechanisms through which genetics determine our lifestyle and help us figure out which drugs might help us fight disease. Well, that investment was made in the 1990s, and today the genomics industry in America has 270,000 jobs paying an average salary of $70,000 a year. This is the kind of thing we can create when we put our minds to government investments in new industries.
What message do you have to offer for people here in Chattanooga when you come here?
I think the message for Chattanooga is that everybody wants to be a tech hub. Everybody's talking about that. That's not new to Chattanooga. Everybody's talking about that. The difference is, I think, right now it's incredibly hard for places like Chattanooga to compete with the coastal superpowers like Boston and New York and San Francisco, because there's so much concentration of economic innovation in those places that it's hard for Chattanooga to break through the noise. So what you need is you need a real jumpstart. You need a real initiative where the federal government can put in the resources that are needed to create new tech hubs, to actually create places that can compete with these giants on the coast. And that's not going to happen. I mean, our feeling is that's not going to happen just with the limited resources a place like Chattanooga or the state of Tennessee have. That's going to require the federal government to commit to major new investments and commit to making them around the country, not just in a few cities.
All right. Jonathan Gruber, thanks so much.
Yeah, you bet. My pleasure.